People who have never been here to First Presbyterian Church will often ask me what the church is like. Is First Presbyterian Church conservative? Is it liberal? Is it moderate? What kind of people attend? Where will your church be in 15 years? Well, it's hard to answer questions like that. There are questions about you, a group of people, who are made up of individuals and have differing opinions. Let's be honest, we don't all agree about everything. We are Presbyterians, after all. So what I usually say is something like this. Well, there's a group at First Presbyterian Church who felt led by God to make lunches for people in their community. And there's a person I know at First Presbyterian who, whenever he sees a need, just quietly and simply does what he can to meet that need. I tell them that some hear God's voices as clear as they hear a ringing bell, and others find it hard to distinguish between their own thoughts and God's thoughts. And last year, when our one great hour of sharing offering was a little short of our goal, there were people who stepped up and made sure that we made our goal. I talk about the basement and the vertical lift and how God has helped us all to do just a bit more than we might have thought we could. In other words, when people ask me about this church, I brag about you and what God has done through you. Because First Presbyterian Church is full of faithful people. And some are conservative and some are liberal. Although I have no idea what those terms mean anymore. Some of you love to hunt, and some of you may be petrified of firearms. Some of us struggle to be faithful, and some hear God's voice as clear as a bell. But I know that we all struggle together to hear and to seek and to do God's will. Because it's hard to describe any group of people. We label. Because in truth, every group is made up of individuals. We're all different from each other, uniquely created by God. But that doesn't stop us from reaching certain conclusions about people, about churches, about race or creed or class or age or gender. Remembering we're unique individuals should stop us from making assumptions and reaching premature conclusions, but it doesn't. And so in a way, this first verse of our gospel lesson today is kind of surprising to us. Some Pharisees came and said to Jesus, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." Excuse me, Pharisees tried to save Jesus? Well, we all assume that all Pharisees are bad. The stories in the Bible about them don't tend to paint them in a very positive light. But remember Nicodemus, the faithful man of the Jewish law? He comes to Jesus three times in the Gospel of John and even goes so far as to assist Joseph of Arimathea in preparing Jesus' body for burial. And then, of course, there's the Apostle Paul, who some people love to hate, but he completely turns away from his life as a Pharisee to follow Jesus, even unto death. So on the one hand, you have these two Pharisees, Nicodemus and Paul, and on the other hand, you have the Pharisees who conspire together to bring about Jesus' death. And somewhere in the middle, maybe, you have this group today who didn't want Herod to kill Jesus, but they weren't willing to leave behind everything they knew, their positions of power, to follow Jesus either. They saw too many obstacles to making that decision to go ahead and step out of the life they knew and to follow. You could say they were hedging their bets. You see, if he's Christ, then they've done him a favor, and if he's not, then no one needs to know what they've done. And sadly, though we don't like to admit it, many of us live in that same space. We're happy to be Christians as long as being Christian doesn't ask us to do anything that might get us in trouble or threaten our standing in the community, or perhaps challenge our relationships with family and friends. We're happy to follow Jesus, to wear a cross around our neck, maybe even invite a friend to church. But don't ask us to be different. There are just too many obstacles to overcome. Well, for a long time, the nation of Israel was different. In fact, they worked very hard to be a different people, to be the people of God. They went so far as to build an actual wall between themselves and the outside world. Part of that wall was uncovered a few years ago by archaeologists in Jerusalem. Part of a wall that was built by King Solomon still exists today. King Solomon, you'll remember, built the temple, and then Herod rebuilt the temple, but not this Herod in this story. The Herod in this story is the son of the Herod who rebuilt the temple. This Herod, his son, is the one who is plotting to kill Jesus. You see, when everything collapsed, Herod made a decision. Rather than fight against the Romans who occupied the kingdom, rather than risk the obstacles and stay true to God, he bowed to the Romans and became their puppet ruler. He maintained his title, but he gave up a lot of his power. He kept the temple intact, but he ensured that the priests prayed for the emperor. Holding tight to the law and his culture in one hand, while adopting the ways of Rome in the other, it was like trying to walk a tightrope with one foot in each group. I think this is something that we believe is possible to do still today. We think we can be simultaneously Christian and American, or Christian. We can serve God and still serve the world with equal allegiance to both. That somehow we can follow Jesus without being too odd or too radical. That we can be a friend to Jesus without threatening our place in Herod's court. And Jesus seems to know that these Pharisees have come to him with a foot in each camp. Apparently, they've overheard Herod saying that he was plotting to kill Jesus. So they had to be close to Herod. But they still couldn't muster the courage to up and follow Jesus. So they come and warn him. You see, they had kids to raise and feed. They couldn't make the empire mad, or they would lose their influence, and they couldn't make the puppet king angry, or they might well lose their lives. They couldn't bring themselves to overcome the obstacles in their way. And that's normal enough, I'd say. You certainly wouldn't think they would lose themselves in that process. They weren't doing anything wrong, really, bowing to Herod, helping out Jesus a little on the side. We tend to think that way of life is possible. We can live a little in the world and a little in the kingdom, but friends, that's a dangerous game to play. Seems to me it's like playing with fire. Like fire, it's fine as long as it stays on top of the stove or in the fireplace. You can cook with it, you can stay warm with it. But if you give it an inch, it will consume you and your entire household. Or like love, that you think you can keep at bay, and the next thing you know, you're doing things you never thought you'd do and saying things you thought you'd never say. We think we can control the fox. Bow to the fox Monday through Friday while maintaining our true allegiance to Christ, until that day when Jesus asks us to choose sides. With whom does your allegiance lie? Whom will you serve? Jesus says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing." Well, friends, Herod is a fox, and the world is a fox. And if you think you can serve two masters, if you think you can really handle it all, you should be very, very careful, because given the chance, The world will consume you. It will take everything and leave you empty. And so I wonder if all of those obstacles out there, all of those things in the world, aren't really the obstacles at all. I wonder if the last real obstacle in our lives isn't us, you and me, as a group and as individuals. And we've been seeking a solution in all the wrong places. Because, friends, the fox is in the hen house. And the fox is not in this for your salvation. Fox is in the hen house as credit cards promise happiness but deliver debt and worry. The fox is in the hen house as the news assaults us with continual alarm of fear for who might be out there. The fox is in the hen house telling us that working 60 to 80 hours a week will pay off in time, but when the budget gets tight, the fox will lay you off and wish you good luck. The fox was in the hen house for the psalmist who said, "Whom shall I fear? God is God. Whom shall I fear? Why are we so afraid?" The fox is in the hen house, and if you think it isn't real, look where the path led the Pharisees. Their house is left desolate by the Romans, with whom they had compromised. The Romans destroyed their temple only a few years after the death of Jesus. So we're in a difficult position, friends, because like the Pharisees, we must on occasion bow to the fox. There are incomes to be earned, children to be fed, and we don't want to look too strange or we'll lose our friends. But don't be fooled. The fox is not worthy of our faith. The fox does not have all the answers, though the fox would like us to believe otherwise. We must choose just as Jesus had to choose out there in the wilderness. Will we accept a deluded faith that fills our belly and leads nowhere, or will we turn to God who alone is worthy of our faith? Will we turn to Jesus who can overcome all obstacles, even when the obstacle is us? We are people of faith, living in a culture of fear. So we must call a fox a fox. We have to talk about truth in a world of misstatements. We have to talk about what love really is in a world of pleasure and pleasing. We can live lives of radical faith because Christ has shown us that way. And because he has, there is no obstacle, not ourselves, not the world, not even death, that we cannot overcome with the help of God. Amen.